Afternoon, everybody. Call the Finance Committee to order. Apologize for the delay. Present today is Representative Munoz, Representative Holmes, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Costello, Representative Osterman, Representative Newman, Representatives Thompson, and Representative Edgman. Today we're going to hear from the Office of Management and Budget on the amendments that they're bringing forward. So, Karen, if you want to join us. I think we do a lot better and get a lot more done if we let you present it all first, and then we'll come back to questions on. Welcome, Representative Guerra.
Sorry, just need to get my papers here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Karen Rehfeld, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Appreciate the chance to walk through the proposed amendments that we delivered to you as required by the 30th day. It's a very small amendment package, nonetheless important, and we appreciate your consideration of these. I'll start with the fiscal year 14 supplemental summary and spreadsheet. You should have one in your packet. There's a one-page spreadsheet for related to House Bill 299. Our supplementals, as you know, we delivered the supplemental bill to you on the 15th legislative day. Can everyone hear me okay?
No.
Hang on here. Let me make sure.
Doesn't feel like I have to get closer.
I'm not sure everybody has their proper packet in front of them.
There should be a one-page supplemental summary and then a one-page spreadsheet that has, it's called FY 2014 Supplemental Bill Amendments.
And your manila folder says 299 on it?
Which one are we looking at?
Supplemental.
Oh, please.
Got it?
Which one
are we
on?
299.
No. Thank you. So, fortunately, Mr. Chairman, there are very few amendments that we are requesting to the supplemental bill. If you look at this spreadsheet, line 2, you'll see we are requesting a contingent appropriation of $32.7 million for the Susitna-Watonna hydroelectric project. This appropriation would be contingent upon the Alaska Energy Authority obtaining the executed land access permits that they need in order to continue with the field studies and other activities that are needed to get to the FERC licensing application process. This would be in addition to the $10 million that's already before you in the fiscal year 2015 capital budget. On line 3 and 4, we're requesting two reappropriations of excess fuel trigger dollars in the current year budget. On line 3, it's an estimate of $2.5 million, and this is specific to the costs related to the delayed return to service of the Tustamina. So we had loss of revenue from that particular delay in service, and we had some additional costs related to the delay of the Tustamina and having the Kennecott do some of those runs. So this excess fuel trigger would help us with those costs in the current year. And then on line 4, Mr. Chairman, we're requesting a reappropriation of the estimated remaining balance in the fuel trigger of $5 million into the vessel replacement fund. You may recall that the legislature in this fiscal year put $10 million into the budget for design of a replacement vessel for the Tustamina, and we know we're going to need construction funds for that vessel at some point in the future when that design work is completed. So our request would be for your consideration to use the excess fuel trigger for the vessel replacement fund. So those are the requests specific to the supplemental bill. If we turn to the fiscal year...
We'll take questions and
okay.
Get this off the table. Representative Guerra.
So I think probably within both parties, there are pro-Susitna and folks and folks have questions about the Sisseton project. I'm one that has questions about it. Why we spent $170 million so far, why would we spend another $32 million at the same time we're working on a large diameter gas line that would provide more energy than we can use, about eight times more energy than we can use, in tight fiscal times?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, the Susitna-Watonna project, of course, is one that's been very important to the whole rail belt system and will provide help us to meet our renewable energy goal of 50% of electrical generation by 2025. It will be a source of inexpensive hydropower for the whole region. It's not exclusive of the gas line project, and of course a gas line project that I think we have generally pretty good strong support for will do not only provide gas for Alaskans, and particularly in their heat source, but also a revenue stream for the state of Alaska. So I don't believe that these projects are exclusive of one another.
Through the chair. Representative
Guerra.
Still, the gas line will produce, if it goes ahead, more energy than we need. When you say
I don't want to get into a debate about which project's the better project. I want to talk about what they want to use the money for and whether we think that that's a good idea or not. We could spend a lot of time debating that point, and at some point in time we will have the gas line in front of us, and we can debate whether that's a good idea as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't mean to go off point. I just don't know with these tight budget times why $32 million makes sense at the same time we're working on that alternative project.
And that's a very appropriate question, but I don't want to debate the gas line as the reason why we have that question in front of us.
Okay. And then can I ask one other question?
Sure, you can ask that question again on the
thing. No, a different question.
All right.
Thank you. Ms. Rayfield, you said, I don't know I haven't seen the math, but you said the Sisseton project will produce inexpensive power. Does that factor in the cost of building the project, or is it only inexpensive power if the state pays for the project?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, the total financing package for the Sisseton project has not yet been determined. I think that the Alaska Energy Authority could give you some of the estimates of what they believe the savings would be and what the cost of the hydropower would be. And we do have someone in the room from Ms. Fisher-Goad from AEA, if it's the will of the committee to have her come to the table to speak to that.
I don't want to go beyond your bounds, Mr. Chair. So,
Karen, is there money in the current FY15 budget for Sisseton?
Mr. Chairman, there is. We have in the 15 budget, we put forward $10 million. And at the time, we did not put in a larger dollar amount than that because we were hoping that they were going to have the executed permits in order for us to bring forward a dollar amount for the field studies they need to get done this year. They're still working, although I think they've made some substantial progress towards getting those signed permits, and several of the landowners are very willing to sign those permits. So we're making progress. That's why the contingent language is attached to the supplemental request in front of you.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm following up on your question, which is it's a little bit confusing to me why it is we'd be asking now for, if you add the FY14 money that was appropriated last year, the 95.2, I guess, million, and then you add the 32.7, we're up to 127.9 million for fiscal year 14. And then we're only asking for 10 million for fiscal year 15. And I'm being told that the reason for putting this now, that there wasn't more asked for next year, was we didn't think they were going to get the permits. Now they are. But now instead of putting it in 15, we're trying to put it into 14. And I guess, Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering if this isn't a little bit of a shell game to put next year's funding into a supplemental. I mean, I don't want to be that blunt, but I guess I'm going to be that blunt. Is if we're putting it into the supplemental, that doesn't count against this year's cap. Is this really money that's going to be used in fiscal year 14, or is this, and then why only $10 million for next year?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holm, all very good questions. What we're trying to put forward here is there's an estimate, and I believe in the project write-up for the capital project, you'll see sort of the estimated cash flow needs for the remainder of this year and through fiscal year 15. So if they get, because this project that we're requesting right now is contingent upon those permits being obtained, because they'll need those in order to continue to do the field studies, then they would have not only about $30 million that's remaining in the existing project, the appropriations that we have, plus the $32.7 million and the $10 million that we have in the 15 budget. That should allow them to get all the way through next fiscal year, and then there will be one more year, if everything stays on track, of additional funding necessary to get to the licensing application period. If that's successful, then there'll be another installment for engineering or pre-engineering. So I appreciate that it is confusing. Hopefully the write-up and the schedule that's listed in the backup will show you that cash flow and timing.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that, there are two questions. First of all, do we want to appropriate the funding? But I guess I'm still going to have to dig in a little more as to whether I think that funding should be in the supplemental or in the amended budget for fiscal year 2015. So I'll be
thank you.
Thank you. I'll be looking into that.
Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't think this line of question is inappropriate at all. I mean, that's our job now is to scour the numbers like we've never scoured them before because of the tighter budget times. And I think I'd echo what Representative Holmes was just asking in terms of the appropriation, because I still don't understand what this amount of money actually does for a project that that still is very much in the feasibility stage or the study stage or whatever it is. That's a tremendous amount of funds on a project that, as we know, I think Harry Noah said it at the Commonwealth luncheon this past fall, that to get down to brass tacks, he'd recommend some kind of a Simpson-Bowles commission to sit down and look at all these big projects and figure out which ones we're going to put money to and which ones we're not. So that's sort of my political commentary on that, Mr. Chairman, but I cringe a little bit because I was at a lunch and learn here recently with the Housing Association authorities, and the weatherization monies, and again, credit to the governor for putting $29 million into that. But those funds are only going to get the housing authorities through half the year, is what they told us. The weatherization provides immediate 30-40% savings to every household, plus it provides valuable jobs out across the state. So, you know, without having the full understanding what all this is going towards on a project that I think everybody around the table, there's varying. Some people really support this. Some people maybe aren't as vested in the whole project as like my good friend from Big Lake might be, or the co-chairman and so forth. I have to look at this number and really, again, want to know a little bit more about why such the piling of money behind a project that's very much sort of still on the back of a napkin in some respects, at least to me anyway. And then I'll close by saying there won't be any more money request for weatherization from the governor at this stage. Is that a fair assumption?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgman, a couple of the of your comments and or questions, the Alaska Energy Authority has an approved study plan from FERC. So it's much more than something, back of the napkin. They are really very much engaged in a number of very complex studies in order to meet the timelines for their applications. So, and they have a list of some of those studies, and I know they can give you some more information on that. I appreciate the conversation that we're having here, because this has to get directly to the overall spending level that we're comfortable with given the current environment and what those priorities are to fund within them. I've also had the opportunity to speak with the housing authorities and understand that they are interested in raising that, I think almost doubling it, if I'm recalling correctly. So those will be part of the discussion with you about, you know, those what are the priorities that you want to have included in this budget. We're trying to keep our amendments and our budget as low as we can. This is a priority project. If they are able to get those permits executed, we think it should continue, but clearly there's a lot of discussion that needs to happen.
Mr. Chairman, do you want to have this discussion later on? Because I still don't have an understanding. There's $178 million, I think it is, that have been appropriated so far, and then we're putting 40-some more million into a project that I'll rephrase is still on the drawing board. And now we're about ready to put $32 more million in.
When we put together the supplemental budget and bring it forward, we'll have that conversation about what the actual dollar value is we want to spend on any project. But I don't, again, want to get into debate about one project versus another project on today. We need to understand what they're presenting here, and then we'll have the debate when we have a full supplemental budget in front of us. Representative Thompson.
Yeah, Representative Holmes. That's what I was going to ask for.
Okay, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This appropriation is contingent upon AEA obtaining and holding executed access permits. So is this money designed to facilitate those negotiations? I mean, they're negotiating, and the state doesn't have the money on the table. And it's contingent upon them getting the money. I mean, finish the negotiations, they're going to have to pay the money, not in a supplemental next year, but probably sooner. So is this part of that state being able to negotiate from a stronger position, or showing that we can move forward and we're ready to move forward if the other side comes to an agreement?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, I think the parties involved are very aware that these permits need to get executed in order to continue the project. Mm-hmm. And these discussions have been ongoing since last fall. So I think they're all well aware that in order for us to pursue the project, we're going to need additional resources to do that. It may or may not facilitate additional, but I think they're very close. And again, I have Sarah Fisher Goad here if the committee would like to have that discussion, or she can come speak with you later on that topic.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I'm reading the comments from the governor's office here, and I read that the additional funds are going to be used to support progress and licensing efforts, I know the cause and effect of some of this has happened because I've been contacted by one of my constituents who has a contract with AEA to provide support services for fuel and helicopter services, who, because they had contracts already negotiated out with AEA, now there's some issue with getting those land access permits so they can continue the studies. His contracts have been put on hold, whether he's got over $100,000 invested right now, which would probably take this small business out if he loses it, putting in some tank farms so that he could refuel his helicopters to fly around the researchers and the biologists or all the engineers that are doing the work on this in the different fields. And so I know the cause and effect in this right now is the money was halted on moving these projects forward until they get the access. So I'm assuming that as they get access to different areas that they can continue the research, they'll continue to do that work. And they don't get the funds until those access points along the reservoir, I would assume, are done. But I know that there's businesses out there whose business plan just got put on hold. What do we do about those businesses? There's no contingency for these people who have made a huge investment because the state made a commitment to them, entered into a contract with them, and then they didn't receive the funding they expected. And now these contracts are all dropped or on hold.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, and, you know, I guess I would have to defer to AEA on some of the specifics of the contract language, but you're pointing out exactly one of the challenges that we have with large projects that that have the need to have contractors on board and engaged and ready to work, you know, through a complete season to get some of this work done, which is one of the reasons that the appropriations that we're requesting extend, you know, into the next fiscal year, so you have some opportunities to do that. But that is one of the challenges with a larger project and phasing it in or having sufficient capacity to keep those contractors on board.
And that's my point, Mr. Chair, is, you know, we will discuss which projects we want to move forward with, but the state's already let contracts out for this next couple of years, and what's the commitment the state should have to the people who are already have that commitment with the state?
Representative Garrett.
Thank you. Just on the supplemental technicalities that Representative Holmes and Representative Edgman raised, if this is a supplemental for FY14, then my understanding is this is what you want to have to be able to spend by June 30th of this year. And so if these permits are not secured and you do not need the money by June 30th of this year, are you still going to spend it anyway in FY15?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, these are being requested as capital appropriations, so they would have extended term years. So most capital appropriations are for 5 years. So if they are able to get the if you approve the supplemental and they get the executed permits, they'll be able to engage the contractors and begin the work this spring field season. If that did not occur, if it occurs after June 30 and you had approved the appropriation, they would be able to use the funds. And clearly it's a decision, of course, of the legislature on timing.
And I think that'll be part of the conversation we'll have when we have the supplemental up in front of us here, so whether this is FY15 or FY14. All right, Karen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess as a proponent of the Susitna project, too, I think it will have legacy benefits, and the economics will only get better every year it's in operation, unlike other things that are subject to the vagaries of our energy market. I don't know how many blackmails you have to pay on Susitna before you get, and that's been the history. And a lot of us have sat and taken care of the hydro and other energy needs all around the state, and it just gets real lonely every time Susitna comes up. I mean, I could suggest if we want to keep the rural area stimulated, let's take a real dog like NuVista and reappropriate that to the energy efficiency. I mean, and I'll call it a dog because it's just some buried carrion right now, but buried budget carrion in the tundra up there. And
Chair, I've pulled the strings on a couple of conversations today about we're not going to debate anything about whether this is a good project today or whether it's comparable to the gas line or to weatherization or anything until
we get this. And fair enough. I'm glad I didn't hear that warning, so I got it out. Thank you.
All right, Karen, next one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we could turn to the fiscal year 2015 governor amended, there's a one-page summary, and we can start with operating. There's an a three-page. Let me just make sure I got that. Yeah, a three-page summary for the operating amendments. And then we will do, there's a one-page summary of capital. So on the operating, it'd be to your folder, House Bill 266 and House Bill 267. So, Mr. Chairman, in our efforts, again, to keep this budget very lean, there are very few items that we are putting forward. On page one of the spreadsheet, the first three items are in the Department of Administration. And all of these have to do with requirements under the Affordable Care Act. So you'll see on line one of the spreadsheet, there's a request for $61,300. And these are fees that are required for all active self-insured health plans. So, in other words, we have to pay a fee for every single one of our people in these plans for this patient-centered outcome research institute. On line two, you'll see $68,000 in general funds. This is the same fee imposed. It's for the retiree plans. And then on line three, you will see a $3.2 million reinsurance fee that is also mandated by the Affordable Care Act. The reason that these were not included in the December budget is we were still working through this these requirements with the Department of Law and the Department of Administration to determine, do we need to bring these forward? Could we push back a little bit and see where this is going to end up? We don't know if there will be litigation involved. After some of those discussions, we decided it was more appropriate to put them in the budget so we avoided any penalties that might result from us not paying them, and then continue to have the discussion. So that's the reason that you see these three items before you in the amended budget. On page 2 of 3, you'll see on line 4, there's a reduction under the elected public officers retirement system. That, of course, is based on the number of participants in the system. That actuarial work was not completed until after the December budget was submitted, so that's why we're bringing it forward now.
Do you want questions at the end of this?
End of her presentation.
Yep.
On lines 5 and 6, these are two items that we talked about in the supplemental bill for the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender Agency. So, again, these are based on their caseload and their appellant backlogs. Clearly, I don't think it's going to address all of their backlog, but certainly will assist them. On line 7, you'll see a $25,000 request for statutory designated program receipts. This is for the certification of export logs. Legislative Budget and Audit approved a similar request here recently, and this allows us to do the certification necessary when we export logs primarily to China. On line 8, Mr. Chairman, if I could take a few minutes to talk about our request to restore funding that we had proposed to reduce for the Alaska Bureau of Highway Patrol. You may recall that this was a specialized unit that was established in the Department of Public Safety with federal dollars to maintain a dedicated enforcement on Alaska's four highway safety corridors. When we and over the past several years, we have actually approved replacement of federal dollars we've moved that to a general fund program. When we asked the departments this in our budget development to come forward with some ideas about how they could continue to deliver their main mission and core service at less cost, public safety came up with some proposals that would have, through their state trooper detachments, provided enforcement activities on the highway safety corridors. As we've continued to look at how they would transition to this, it became very clear that we would not be able to maintain the level of dedicated enforcement on those roadways, particularly as the trooper detachments continue to have a great deal of pressure on just the regular patrol services. So it became clear to us that in order for us to be able to retain the dedicated resources, which have been so successful in reducing highway fatalities and increasing safety along those roadways, that we would ask you to consider restoring it to the current year level. So that's before you. On line 9, under the University of Alaska, they've completed their negotiations with United Academics and have come forward with a request for a total of $3,370,000 for that negotiated agreement. $1,686,500 is general fund. On line 10, basically, Mr. Chairman, this is a cleanup having to do with we just update the projections for the amount necessary to inflation-proof the permanent fund. They give us a monthly financial statement. I'm sure all of you receive it as well. So we just try to update that at Governor's amended time. On page 3 of 3, line 11, Department of Corrections, this is deleting some contingency language that we had included in the December budget. Corrections believes they will receive the federal funding necessary, so we were recommending deleting this language. On line 12 and 13, we have some, again, just some true-up of debt service estimates based on timing and cash flow for GO bond debt service on line 12. And then on line 13, we had a couple of years ago, the legislature approved some bond defeasance, and we were able to have some additional cash to pay, make those payments so we can, again, reduce that. So overall, you'll see a reduction in general fund in the operating budget amendments there, $5.8
million. Questions? Representative Guerra? I guess not. Representative Newman?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, on line 8, I'm trying to figure this out in my mind. For the highway safety corridors, two of which are in my district. According to DOT, this year's testimony on the highway safety corridors, none of the highway safety corridors in the state would qualify anymore for being underneath the guise of being a highway safety corridor because of improvements in those highways. In less fatalities, accidents, and stuff, and in just improvements in the road. And I'm trying to figure out in my mind, would they not qualify because they received this extra trooper patrols on there for enforcement, or if you drop this back off, or are they already at that point where they don't need those funds anymore? Have you had that discussion with the commissioners on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, I may not be fully understanding the question, but my understanding is when we first started establishing the Bureau of Highway Patrol through the federal National Highway Safety Funds that went to DOT, there were some specific parameters about what those could be used for. And so DOT and the Department of Public Safety worked together on not only the four identified corridors, which I'm not an expert on how those designations occurred, but that they work together on the enforcement, engineering, and education plan for the National Highway Safety Administration to approve the use of those federal dollars, and that over time some of those parameters changed. Federal funds were no longer available to public safety, which is why we had come forward in the last couple of years and replaced those with general fund dollars. So at this point, I'm not really able to, I think, answer your question about what may or may not be eligible as a highway safety corridor. But our proposal here would be to continue to provide our enforcement, a state general funded enforcement along those corridors without the federal dollars.
And Mr. Chair, I just wanted to bring that to the committee's attention. You know, it's hard to try and probably figure out if it was further enforcement that caused it. Fatalities and accidents and citations or upgrades in the road or a combination of all of the above, and I suspect it's a combination of all of the above, and maybe we should look at maybe a partial funding of this instead of a full funding or as opposed to no funding. I don't know.
Thank you.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Line 4 on page 2, the EPOR, $150,000. This is for actuarial work.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it was based on the actuarial work. So they evaluate the funds annually and give us that information.
Right. So does the fund supposed to pay for this, or obviously it's coming out of general funds? I'm just,
it's,
it doesn't
Mr.
have a fund.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, it's a decrement based on the number of
right.
of eligibles
yes,
remaining
that.
In
right.
the system. Right.
So the system doesn't have its own self-standing fund. It's
this is EPORS has been its own fund. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'll get the answer. Then.
Karen, on line 9, the university contract negotiations. My understanding, and I have not seen anything in writing yet on it, but I've been told that, that this is a 2%, 2%, 2% for 3 years, and plus a $750 per employee per year bonus. Is that correct? And the reason I bring it up is because most contracts that we've been seeing negotiated so far, both last year, particularly last year, was 1-1-1 or 1-1-2. Similar to that, and school districts are telling all their employees 0-0-0 for the last 2 or 3 years. So, is this 2-2-2 and plus 750?
Mr. Chairman, there is a write-up that generally describes the agreement. I think there are some things that the university would tell you about what their employees are required to pay in terms of their health insurance and other things that other state employees are not. They don't have the pay increments and other things. I think we have a representative from the university here that could probably answer more detailed questions about what they've negotiated, if that's your pleasure.
But it is 2-2-2.
I believe that's the case here.
Chris Christensen is just dying to talk.
On up, please.
The only time a whale gets harpooned is when it spouts off, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Chris Christensen, University of Alaska. It's difficult to do a direct comparison of percentages from a university contract to a state contract for the simple reason that they cover different things. The university, for example, unlike the state, which gives 3% longevity increases to every employee the first 6 or 7 years they're employed, and then additional longevity increases every other year as long as they're employed. The university doesn't give longevity increases. So what you see here covers essentially the full package. The university also does a number of other things that reduce the value of the package to employees. For example, I know, as you know, I spent a 28-year career working for the state, so I'm very familiar with the benefits that those employees get. At the university, I get roughly 60% of the leave time I would get if I were still working for the judicial branch. The university gives me some sick leave on top of that, but that isn't actually of any value unless I get sick. Next year, I'm going to take a wilderness trip that's going to require me to go on leave without pay. And if I were still a state employee, the state would be paying me for that vacation. The state also pays 100% of the economy medical plan premiums for its employees. The university this year is paying only 83%, and next year, FY15, we're going to be paying 82% of the cost of those health insurance premiums. Every month, I have $200 taken out of my paycheck to pay my share of the health insurance premium, something that isn't done in the three branches. So you can't really do a direct comparison. I think we've negotiated some very tight, responsible contracts. I would note, for example, the contract you're looking at is for the largest faculty union. It's the largest union the university has. Doesn't have longevity increases. What it has is a small pot of money for genuine merit increases for exemplary performance, for doing things like bringing grants into the university. And many professors will get no bonus. Some of them will get a small one. The ones who really perform get a big one. If you looked at these contracts, what you would see are contracts that don't so much look like government union contracts. They look a lot more like private sector contracts because they do not just give people money for keeping the seat warm. They give people money for performing.
How about the $750 cash bonus? Is that specifically for something?
No, sir. That was negotiated rather than a percentage it was negotiated as just a sum. And that the actual percentage increase that is there, I think, is 2% a year. And the cash is what's going to be used for example, for the merit increases or for the market increases. But as I said, no mere longevity increases like the rest of government gives.
How many employees are under this increase?
I believe, sir, it's just under 1,000.
1,000?
Just under 1,000. That's correct. I think it's roughly 950 full-time equivalents.
All right, thank you. Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Does the United Academics do better because they're a bunch of professors and they're smarter, or do you? I'm comparing the increases the Department of Administration is. Mr. Thayer and Ms. Holtberg as commissioners have held a harder line, and they are we dealing with a smarter predator there, or maybe not as good a negotiator? What's what do you count that for?
Co-Chair Stoltz, I think that I think you've got two sides that negotiated long and hard and came to an agreement that they thought was fair. I think it's pretty reasonable and responsible when you look at the totality of the expenses and what the employees actually gave up, the lesser level of benefits that they get. As I said, it is very difficult to do a direct percentage comparison with one of these contracts and one of the contracts negotiated by the executive branch. Having worked for the university for just a few years, it does interest me, however, that no one else in state government does seem to be looking to what we're doing as a way of managing personnel costs in an era of declining revenue.
And on the $750, that's, I imagine, for a tenured professor, that's a pretty de minimis benefit. Does that go to an adjunct professor as well, or is that a different negotiating contract?
Sir, that's a different union. This particular union are the professors who teach the upper-level classes. And they don't start at very much. A full professor, not an associate or an assistant professor or an instructor, but a full professor starts at about $62,000 a year, which is, I think, the equivalent of a 19A in the state system.
Now, the $750, I think, might be a lot more prudent way to do it. You're not dialing in into percentage formulas, and you're treating. Everybody equally. Obviously, why should the higher paid person get a higher increase than the if you did it by percentage, you'd be paying a lot more for the folks that are already pretty well financially situated. And I you know, that's the part of the negotiating part. I think actually seems pretty fair. It does treat your entry level people. It's not equal, but it's probably fair.
And if I may, one thing I would like to point out is the contract does reclaim some management rights that were given away many, many years ago. Things like improved language that provides that management has to write the right to assign a workload that actually meets the needs of the university with a focus on increased productivity of the faculty. We think that the management givebacks actually reduce the cost to us of these contracts. And I would note that the faculty was very forthcoming on this. They see the problem we see, and there are a lot of good folks who want to make the university better, and they worked with us to come up with a contract that would do that.
And just lastly, I had one of my professors from UAF. He's in his last year, I think, after 38 years. I bought him lunch, and I guess not the unequal side, that I was great to see him. He told me that this year the United Academics is there's a $5.8 million increase, of which 2.9 would come from the state GF, and the other 2.9, that's separate from this appropriation? Or is this part of it?
Representative Stoltz, I think if not all the university's contracts are fully negotiated. Once they are, it appears that the full amount of money that will be needed to fund those contracts will be approximately $5.1 million from the university and $5.1 million from the state's general fund.
Maybe he's trying to plant in that 5.8 would be better. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I find it interesting that we're trying to figure out how to balance a budget and not take any more out of savings than we actually have to. And per employee, that averages out about over $4,000 each, a raise each year. Makes me wonder. Representative Thompson.
Thank you. I was thinking along the same lines as Co-Chair Stoltz. It shows that University Receipts is picking up half of this for this year. Is that all 3 years? It would be that it ticks up half each year?
Through the chair, yes, sir, it is. And as you know, up until 3 or 4 years ago, the state actually picked up 60%. And now we're in a situation where we're picking up half. And I think that we certainly have the incentive at this level to do the sorts of things and produce the sorts of contracts that you're seeing here today with the cost reductions that they contain.
And just as a follow-up, I just wanted maybe I didn't hear this. It might have been already stated. But the $750, is that just the first year? Is that each year they're going to get additional $750?
Through the chair, that's each year.
Thank you.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Just so I understand the numbers, the university is picking up $1.686 million of this, and you're asking for the general fund to pick up the other $1.686? That's
through the chair, that's correct, Representative Guerra.
And then soon you'll be before us, either this year or next year, with another for other employees, $5.1 million from the general fund and $5.1 million that the university will absorb?
Through the chair, that should all be in this year's budget. The last contract that's being negotiated, well, there are two that you haven't seen yet, but they're both much, much, much smaller than this. And all of them should approximately add up to about 5.1.
Through the chair. That's already in this year's budget?
Some of them are already in this year's budget. The ones that you have already seen in the governor's budget were the United Federation of Teachers, the Fairbanks Firefighters Union, and the non-covered employees. With this amendment, you're seeing the United Academics faculty. What you still have not seen are the UA adjuncts, which will be more in the neighborhood, I think, of $200,000 UGF and $200,000 DGF.
Thanks.
I just have
Representative Stoltz.
And this, you know, Mr. Christians doesn't have to help on this one, but Ms. Rayfield, we talked about EPORs. Let me say that the folks don't know that is the elected public officials retirement system, and it was only in effect for 2 years or longer.
I thought a little longer than that, but I have to check.
I think it was it might have been established in the 9th legislature. I recall back then it was a little different configuration around here. There were 9 Republicans in the House. It was a little different time and place. And it was a pretty generous benefit program if you could add on to your retirement by working at a higher paying job for one day, and that became your new base rate. But how many, I imagine, of that youthful group of ad hocers, they've got to all be in their 60s at least, right? And many of them have since terminated from the program. Well, that's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're no longer beneficiaries.
Yes.
Do we know how many folks are still out there? We could probably figure out who they are just by looking at the roster of former members. And
The write-up indicates there are 20 retirees and 15 survivors still receiving benefits.
I also want to put a perspective of how few employees can have a pretty big impact, because that's a class that really didn't put money into the system, and we're paying an awful lot because a lot of them did. Some of them didn't ever take real benefit of that, didn't ever get other state employment or municipal PERS-related positions. Some of them did for very short periods. Some of them are very distinguished, went on to other careers as commissioners and other things like that, and they established it or different jobs. Some people, there were some examples of real abuse. They were just very short employment, and those are, I just thought I'd just put that out as a just a little, I guess, sometimes when you know something, it's hard not to say it. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Can I go back to an appropriation item above the university one? Do you mind?
Yes. You weren't here when I called your name earlier.
Thank you. Though, just Ms. Rayfield, just a general budget question. The last system the representative Stoltz mentioned, I feel, was abusive. But there's another abusive thing, I think, that only the administration can stop, which is the game where somebody makes $50,000 a year and then they go get their high threes at $110,000 a year or something like that. And is the administration guarding against allowing folks to do that? Because they didn't pay into the pension system at $110,000 a year, but that their pension is going to be based on that. So
they can do it as a municipal employee too, though.
Yeah. But I mean, is the administration looking closely at people who try and get high threes who really didn't pay that kind of money into the system?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, it would be better for the Commissioner of Administration to come in and talk to you about the efforts that they're making to try to tighten up what we are able to do, either through our policy and regulation and what areas are more statutorily required. But they could certainly give you a better idea of where we are on that.
I'll ask you my budget question, though. I would hope you would pass that along. But
there's more to that question than, I mean, you know, if you serve on the Borough Assembly for 3 years and take $100 out of it that goes into retirement and you become elected at $50,000, then you're all of a sudden getting benefits at whatever your time frame was for.
Sure. No, I know somebody who had an assembly job and all of a sudden they were here for an $80,000 a year job, and I asked what they were doing here, and they said they were getting their high threes. So at least they were honest. Line 5 and line 6, Karen. I guess unless I've missed the memos, I haven't gotten an answer, but maybe I've missed the memos. We've been given presentations numerous times that the increase in sentences for what used to be 0 to 1 year crimes have become 1 to 2 and 3 year crimes. That's that good. If we keep this up, we're on the verge of building another prison. And my questions repeatedly have been, can you show us which of those 0 to 1 year crimes have become 1, 2, and 3 year crimes so we can see if reducing any of those is appropriate so we might avoid the cost of another prison? As far as I know, we haven't gotten any answer. And I guess I sort of feel like the administration is like the ship that's sailing, and no matter how many times we ask them to steer it a certain direction, it just keeps sailing. So have you looked into that at all? Has anybody looked into it, or is that just like a question I keep asking and nobody's ever going to get back to us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, you know that I know that the criminal justice working group that includes law, the court system, corrections, public safety, look at these types of issues. I don't know exactly how the question that you're asking has been framed to them, but that would be the group that should be able to respond to it. So we'll certainly let them know that this is of interest to you and to the committee and try to get you the information on sentencing and other issues that are facing criminal justice.
Thank you, through the chair. I've missed the bill filing deadline, so I can't do anything about it. Frankly, yeah, just come to us with your costs for the new prison, I guess. I mean, I know it's not your fault, but the ship's on autopilot, and nobody's doing anything about it. And I think that's an administration issue.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, I am certain there are people that are very engaged in that question, so we'll make sure you get some information.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
And I'd like to bring in Governor Huckabee and Governor Dukakis and talk about the efficacy of trying to pick which prisoners are harmless.
We're talking about low-level crimes.
Well, we're talking about crimes, and those they thought they were safe.
I wouldn't address those high-level crimes myself.
Okay, seeing no further questions, let's go to the Capitol side.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a one-page spreadsheet. There are really very few capital items that we put forward in the amendments. You'll see on line one, the Susitna-Watonna project is really just an update of the backup. So you have a schedule in there. It's just an update. Line two, on the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council, requesting $580,800. This will purchase two parcels on the lower Kenai River to provide for both public access and also some riverbank restoration on the river. So this came from the trustee council, and we're requesting your consideration of that. On line 3 and 4, this is really a request for an appropriation for the Alaska Marine Highway. In our current fiscal year 15 budget before you, we have a $6 million general fund request for vessel and terminal upgrades and overhauls. It's an annual request that we put forward. Given the aging vessels and the amount of money that the department has had to put into these vessels once you take them out of the water, we are asking to increase that by $6 million. And this would come from the Alaska Marine Highway Stabilization Fund, their capitalized account. So we're requesting that as a funding source from that existing stabilization fund to help secure more resources for the vessel and terminal upgrades. On line 5, we have also for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. This is a new project. The department has been working on this particular item with their federal and other state entities on cleanup of a site at Antioch High School. It's PCB contamination. It's been an issue for a very long time. This is a negotiated agreement between the parties. So the project totals $9.7 million. The state's portion of that, I think, is about 16%. It's in the backup how much of the percent. But it's $2,497,500 in general funds for that particular project. And, Mr. Chairman, that's it for capital.
I'll start out with the number 2, the Exxon Valdez. I didn't realize Exxon Valdez oil went up the Kenai River.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not an expert on the Exxon Valdez oil spill, but I think that they're able to use some of their resources for restoration and access projects, and apparently this is an item that they feel that they are able to contribute to, and we're recommending that we put it forward.
Okay, I guess we can ask them how they get outside of their spill oil area. Representative,
that's not the furthest drift.
Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but just pointing out that on line 1, the description set for, and this is not, I mean, there's two questions. They're the pipeline versus Swatana, or the whether or not you fund the project. I'm not getting anywhere near that debate. I'm asking about supplementals versus, you know, FY14 versus FY15. And on line 1, the description says this amendment updates the projected future year funding needed. And I guess I would respectfully submit, Mr. Chairman, that if it's future needs, it shouldn't be in a supplemental. It should be in the FY15 budget.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holmes, absolutely. I think if you look at the particular project, what this is updating is our basically the out-year costs based on the $10 million that we had requested in the budget and what would be needed in the next fiscal year, so you could just see the full picture. And then there's the schedule that's behind that should help clarify what they believe their cash flow is. So, and I know that Ms. Fisher-Grode would be happy to walk through that with you.
No further questions? I'm going to go back to supplemental for a second, Karen. I got one question, and you don't have to look at. I want a number now that shows what the anticipated shortfall in draw from the savings accounts is going to be when we, based upon what we're working with right now as far as total budgets.
Mr. Chairman, there should be an. I apologize if you don't have it in your packet. We always produce an amended fiscal summary, so we'll make sure that you have it. I know it's on our website, but the draw with if you look at the revised fiscal summary, it will also have fiscal notes that were not reflected in December, so you'll have kind of a full picture. So in December for fiscal year 14. We were looking at a draw of about $1.9 billion out of our reserve funds. With the fiscal notes and supplementals that we've put forward, that draw would be just under $2.1 billion. In fiscal year 15, in December, our draw was at $1.1 billion. fiscal notes and the amendments here is another just under $29 million. So the draw would be about 1.13 and 15. But there is a amended fiscal summary online, so you'll be able to see all of that.
Karen, on the capital budget amendments on the Antioch High School appropriation, the last one. As somebody who's done these kinds of cases before, I certainly don't want students to be located at a place where their health is in danger. But is the waste at the site so far sunken that it's not affecting anybody at this point, or is it in some way where it's contaminating drinking water? I mean, is it a danger or is it not a danger? If it's not a danger, do we have an option not to spend the money for the cleanup at this point? I mean, I certainly want it cleaned up if it is a danger. I certainly question it if it's so sunken below the earth that it's, or below the surface that it's not.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, first of all, I don't believe that the school would be operating if the students were in danger. I think there was some preliminary work that was done. I mean, any immediate danger. There's some work done by DEC that will be for cleanup that will be repaid as a portion of this particular negotiated settlement, but there's still work to be done. I think that the Department of Transportation and DEC can give you more information about the status and the depth of the contamination and what's being done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess we need more information. I don't want anybody to be in danger, that's for sure. But the comment that the high school wouldn't be operating if there was a danger makes me wonder whether or not there's a need for this expenditure.
Representative Stoltz.
I suspect part of the danger is not just the health risk, but we have a very active bar association. A lot of it's financial danger. This is the kind of things that leads to lawsuits and litigations, and I guess we call it just like in medicine, you do things defensively, and I would bet Ms. Rayfield probably doesn't want to put on the record, we're afraid of being sued in the aftermath, but when you have a known environmental risk, can we ignore it? And that's part of a discovery and the process, and I doubt if members who said, well, let's wait and see, would go and testify for the defendants in the aftermath. So we do a lot of things because of the fear of the consequences of the legal system.
Mr. Chairman, Kotar Stoltz, the backup does talk about these buildings are the school shop and a science classroom facility, and it also talks about drinking water wells that are clear on the site, but it does also go on to talk about the PCB contamination and what they've been doing and what the agreement would do in terms of cleanup. So I think that again, DEC and DOT can probably provide you with more information on what's happening.
Further questions on any of the amendments or supplemental?
No.
Seeing none. Thank you, Karen. Appreciate it. Of course, we'll be back with the bills in front of us and do it again. That's all we had today on today's agenda. Tomorrow is Friday, the 21st. It's an update. We have an update on the Choose Respect initiative, and that'll be at 1:30. So, see, we're adjourned.